Welcome to hour number three. I'm Jim Rome. It is so good to have you here. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We've been talking quite a bit about the NFL Combine. It's in prime time. Joining us now to talk some more about that is an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. He is a friend of the program. Remember, NFL Network is going to provide live coverage of the Combine today, 4 p.m. Eastern, with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends. Lots to talk about. Charles Davis joins us. Charles, it is good to have you back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jim. Happy 2020 to you.
You too. You too.
Yeah, right, that's right. It's probably too late to say that, right? Didn't Larry David say you're not supposed to?
I have no problem with it.
Say that after like the first day. So
my man,
bad.
I'm good with it. I'm good with it. All right. So you were part of the NFL Network's coverage of the 07 Combine, and I want to ask you about a specific moment from that Combine in 1 second. But how different was the Combine in 2007 from what we're talking about in 2020 with the workouts taking place in prime time?
Yeah, that's the biggest one, Jim. I mean, let's think about in the arc of our careers and our lifetime. We're, you know, in the NFL, we're seeing things happen that people said would either never happen or not be successful, or last but not least, no one would care. The Combine would be one of them, right? Why would you televise that? And who the hell would watch that? There's a niche channel called the NFL Network. Who would have enough programming for 24 hours? It's like starting the Golf Channel. Who's going to watch that all day? And the draft. Remember what Pete Rozelle told him? Okay, you can do it, but no one's going to watch this. Why would anyone do that? And look at all these events. They've just exploded. They've boomed. The interest is off the charts. I don't know how far away we are from a live audience here at the Combine, Jim, but I remember when I first started it, I was told that would absolutely, positively never happen. I've seen so many things happen that they told me wouldn't happen that I'm just waiting for the live audience to be next.
Well, that's the truth. You know that's going to happen. Charles Davis joining us. That is such a good point. All these things were not supposed to happen. And then I mentioned there was a specific moment in 07. Calvin Johnson was participating in the 2007 Combine, but the plan was he was not going to run the 40. You, however, were standing near him when the 40s were being run, and you got the sense that he might change his mind and he might run. What gave you that impression?
Oh, Jim, it was unbelievable. I'll try and nutshell it. I was working for NFL Network as one of my first combines. It might have been my second, whatever it was. And I was working on the field. So I was like a roving reporter, for lack of a better term. So I was just down on the field, and Calvin came through. And it had already been announced to every team, to us on TV, the whole thing, that Megatron was not going to be doing anything physical. He was going to do the heights, weights, and interview with the teams and all that, and that's it. He walks in, and you know what it's like, Jim, here. Now you get the lights of the TV, right? Everyone's, you know, all the scouts are piled on that side of the stadium with their stopwatches and their notebooks and the whole deal. And he was just walking, and I wasn't very far from him, okay? So, I got to paraphrase a lot of it because years later the language isn't going to be exact.
Right.
But he said something to the effect of, wow, this is cool. I think I'll run. And I was like, my ears, you know, of course, went immediately 10 sizes larger. What? And I hustled over to him. I said, hey, Calvin, Charles did, blah, blah, blah. Did you say you think you might run? And he said, yeah. He said, is this all televised? Like, this is on TV? And I said, yes, it's on television. It'd be live. He goes, and all those are all the scouts and the coaches? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think I'll run. And then he had to get his shoes, because the story of the shoes I got wrong initially. The story was, everyone uses track spikes to run, you know, the 40. You know, they all think they're sprinters.
Sure.
He'd given his shoes away to, I believe, a quarterback from East Carolina. I believe his name was Pinckney. I can't remember his first name was Philip. I hope I'm getting it correct. Or James. He had given his shoes to him. And so he had to hustle over or send someone to get the shoes back from him. He went in and changed and went to the starting line. And then got announced that Calvin Johnson would run. And you know, Jim, scouts, coaches, everyone, they're very taciturn, right? They're not going to give away a whole lot. It's the first time, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, there actually was a small buzz in the area. Like, well, what? He told us he wasn't going to run.
Right.
And he weighed 236, I believe, and ran a 4.36.
Ah.
And the place obviously didn't go crazy because there's a decorum and you can't do it. But if there could have been, everyone just kind of jolted like, oh my God. And that was one of the big moments I remember.
That's awesome. That's such a good story. Like a 4-3-6 at 236, 239. He had to retrieve his shoes. Charles Davis joining us. So when you look at the combine now, we flash ahead to 2020. Is it pretty much a foregone conclusion in your mind that Joe Burrow is going to go first and that he will play for the Bengals?
It's a foregone conclusion in my mind that he will go first, yes. I hold out just a small thing about not playing for the Bengals because he said, hey, I'm going to go to the team that drafts me and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you notice he's not really saying, I'll be happy to go to Cincinnati and play. And I kind of get a little bit of a kick out of people who are, like, critical of him for not overly committing to that. I say, well, there's a guy named Elway who forced his way out of Baltimore. There's a guy named Manning who forced his way out of San Diego. And at the end of their careers, that was a small postscript. Now, a lot of that is because both of them were tremendous players. But if you force your way out of somewhere and you don't play well, then, of course, that becomes the lead story. But I think he's committed to going to wherever he gets drafted, which looks like it'll be Cincinnati. I don't know that he is going to buck the system the way that the other two did. But I wouldn't look down on him if indeed he did say, I don't want to play in Cincinnati. Okay, he would force their hand, whether they draft him, okay, you're going to play here or nowhere, or they try and make a deal and get the best thing they can. That's entirely up to him. Of course, that becomes a real issue, as you and I know, Jim, if you don't play well. But if he does play well and has a career like a Manning, has a career like an Elway, that really goes away and the bitterness only remains in the city that you spurned.
NFL Network analyst Charles Davis joining us. You're right. You play well. That takes care of everything. NFL Network providing live coverage of the Combine today at 4 p.m. Eastern with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends. All right, so what about Justin Herbert? One of the knocks on him is that maybe he's been too laid back. Maybe he's too relaxed to lead an NFL team. You watched him up close at the Senior Bowl. How fair is that criticism of Herbert?
I don't think it's quite as fair as maybe it could have been at one point. And the reason I say could have been at one point, because Justin Herbert acknowledged that with us at the Senior Bowl, Jim. We did an interview with him after one of the practices and asked him about that very question about leadership and interaction and, you know, being that front guy of a team. And he said, that's something people have talked about and it's something I came here expressly to show people I can do and work on, et cetera. So there's a real aspect to it, but not because he has closed off from teammates, not because he doesn't want to be around people, not because he's above it all. It's just personality. And I'm going to add one other thing, Jim. This is my own opinion. Because of the way we run offenses in college, and this isn't a criticism because it's fun to watch what they're doing, but if you don't huddle, and if you don't have the quarterback as the focal point in terms of guidance on the field, making checks, doing all those things, it's hard to develop that field general personality that we all grew up watching and hearing about. Huh. We produce guys who execute plays, not necessarily are the guys who are, hey, look in the huddle, look in my eyes. We got 85 yards to go. Let's get there. They run off to the sideline, get out into the field, look to the sideline to see if there's a check. Then they go and run the play. We're not developing them the same way. And by the way, if he is not a successful quarterback, it won't be because his personality isn't loud any more so than Marcus Mariota struggled lately and people say it's his personality. That's not the issue. His personality was the same at Oregon. He won a Heisman Trophy.
I think that point you just made about huddling up is really, really interesting. So, Charles, finish that thought. Have you ever seen in your time a quarterback fail in the NFL because he was too quiet and because of a personality issue, because they were too taciturn or passive? Or is that something people just get worked up about for no reason?
I think people get worked up about it mainly for no reason. Could there have been? Obviously, the answer is yes to everything. But I think overall, Jim, that's not the issue why people fail. Typically, that's that quiet quarterback that they say couldn't command a huddle or whatever. He probably wasn't very accurate throwing the football. Okay? I mean, we can go back through all
right.
That. Remember when they said Tony Dungy was too passive to win the big one? Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
In Tampa? And, oh, God, he's got to show more fire and more grit. I have a very good friend who at one point said to me, I need him to just tear down a yard mark. I need him to be more like Woody or Bo or something. I said, oh, that's the reason those guys won games? Because they're fiery and they hit cameramen and do stuff like that? That is not the reason. There's a lot of other reasons that go into it. Quiet people win games, all right? It's not the only one. Look, think about Gil Hodges as a manager of the Mets. he won. You know, I can go right down the line and do this in every sport. Quiet people can command huddles, can command rooms, can get things done. But when things don't go right, Jim, we really do as a society, we really do want to see the fiery person. We want to see that it affects them and it pains them and this, that, and everything.
Yeah, I don't think it means that a guy doesn't care. Well, you only care if you come off the sideline and punch an opponent for getting an interception.
Throw your helmet. You know, you've got to do all those things. I remember I was playing in high school, okay? I screwed up in a scrimmage, all right? And I took my helmet and slammed it down on the sideline, and next thing you know, some pile rolled on it, and the helmet was screwed up and had to get it fixed, blah, blah, blah. The very next day, all right, was the opener of NFL, and Kenny Stabler was with the Oilers. I think he threw like 5 picks that day. And after the 5th pick, he came to the sideline and he took a knee and he's sitting on the sideline and you don't see the helmet go. You don't see him spewing at anyone. He's just, you know, stewing. And my father looked at me and he said, "So, he just threw 5 picks on national television.
Right.
Can you see how he's handling that? I never want to see what I saw again yesterday. And by the way, you don't think it affects him? You don't think it's eating him up alive right now? You don't need to tell everybody that it's bothering you. You just need to fix it."
It's a great story. Charles Davis joining us. Snake was great. I remember early in my career, Charles, talking to him. He came into the TV studio and we sat down. Man, he was so cool. He was so cool.
He's
such an amazing player.
He
was the best. Let me ask you about Jacob Eason from Washington, getting a lot of buzz lately. Could you see him working his way into the first round?
Arm talent, without question, Jim. Arm talent, probably the best out of all the guys we're talking about. Taking it up to Burrow, taking it up to Tua, taking it up to Jordan Love, to Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert's got a hose on him as well. But this kid's got the best arm talent out of the top-tier guys, and I would think, in the entire draft. It's not a throw he can't make. Not a throw he can't make with authority, with dispatch. He can throw off the back foot from the opposite side hash and hit the other guy on the pylon on the opposite side. He can do all of those things. His question is going to be somewhere related to what we had before, but not because of not because he's not loud enough. But is he mature enough? Is he going to handle things the right way? Because when he was at Georgia, when he lost his job to Jacob Fromm after an injury and Fromm took over, it wasn't strictly because Fromm was a better quarterback. By talent, Eason beats Fromm every day and twice on Sunday. But the team really responded better to Jacob Fromm at Georgia. By all accounts that I'm getting from people I know, he has improved all of that at the University of Washington. But that's still going to be the question mark. In a sense, Jim, he's a little bit like Josh Rosen when he came out. People have questions about him in those categories. Maturity, the main one, and how he gets along with everyone. But arm talent? And I'll tell you something, Jim. Tonight, when he throws the football, it's going to be gorgeous coming off his hands. And I met with him earlier this week, and he seemed like a better kid. Well, better kid's the wrong word. He seemed like he was more in control and better composure than when I met him as an 18, 19-year-old.
Charles Davis joining us. I love that notion of tonight. It's in prime time.
And I know. Isn't that crazy? We're doing prime time. Oh, yeah, by the way, that would never happen either. We would not put this in prime time. This is not for the people. This
no
is
chance.
For us.
It's a blast. And then you've got the wide receivers, and it's a really good class. I know you're impressed with the class. You and Daniel Jeremiah caught up with CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma recently. How do you like his skill set? How do you think his game translates to the NFL?
Well, Daniel, who is our foremost authority on this here at the NFL Network, he's our number one guy. He has CeeDee number one on his chart. I think he's got him ahead of Jerry Jeudy of Alabama. I don't think it's an appreciable amount, but he's got him as the number one guy. I love his game. I think there's anything you're looking for from a receiver, he's got. Physique, terrific. Personality is fantastic. Really, really enjoyed him. I checked with my guys at Oklahoma. They say, you know, no diva to him. In fact, one guy that I know, a name that you'll remember Joe Washington?
You bet.
Joe Washington?
Yep.
Joe said, Charles, he's a throwback. And you know, when those guys say throwback, that means they put these kids in their category. That's a big deal. All right, that speaks volumes. People might think that's just a simple term, but for an old veteran like a Joe Washington who played in the 70s and the early 80s, throwback to them is about as high a praise as you can get. He's tough. He's aggressive. He goes up and gets the football. I think he'll need some polish a little bit in running routes just because the style of offense at Oklahoma and so many other places in college football is you have a route, but the biggest thing is find some open space and let the quarterback see it. You know what I mean? Maybe if you have to go to a more precise team, you have to learn a little bit of that. but I'm bullish on this kid. I think he's spectacular, and he's explosive, and a score waiting to happen on any snap.
Charles Davis joining us. He is sitting right inside the stadium. It's going to be in prime time. Charles, before I let you go, the running backs are going to work out tomorrow. Now, for a while, there's been this argument that it's just not worth taking a running back in the first round. Then a number of teams took elite running backs in the first round. Broadly speaking, it seems to have worked out. But when you see the issues, for instance, that Todd Gurley's having, do you get the sense that some teams might be swinging back to not taking running backs that high? Where do you come out?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Jim, and let's just use the Super Bowl as an example. Damian Williams was the lead runner and had a big game for Kansas City when they won it. Some people thought he might have been the MVP of the game, undrafted free agent, if I remember correctly, coming out of Oklahoma. Okay, he'd been at Fresno State and transferred and did that. Look over the other side with San Francisco. Remember, they were a three-headed monster running the football, and Raheem Mostert became the main guy down the stretch. Another undrafted free agent who's been with six or seven teams, but was a monster in the playoffs up until the Super Bowl. Matt Breida, who backed him up, another guy who was an undrafted free agent. Tevin Coleman was the only draft pick, and he wasn't picked in the first round. So all in all, you're seeing across the board in the league, yeah, I think that a lot of them will look at the Gurley situation, the contract that he has with the Rams. That may make them a little more reticent about the whole thing. Frankly, as we start this process, Jim, and it can change, I'm thinking one running back in the first round right now, and that's DeAndre Swift from Georgia. After that, I think we start our run on running backs in the second round.
Hey, Charles, one last thought, bonus. I got to get your thoughts on offensive tackle Mekhi Becton from Louisville. Gigantic. What are your thoughts about him both in person and on tape?
He is an immense human being, Jim.
Huge.
He is a large human being. Someone actually asked him in the media scrum this week about swimming, do you swim or whatever, and he said, at my size, all I need to do is just wade into the water. I'm good. And so I thought that was a great answer coming from him. But I'll leave it to you. I'll leave it this way, Jim. John Gruden's dad, Jim, told me years ago that when he was coaching at Notre Dame, and you know they had those big offensive linemen back in the day, and they won the national title with Joe Montana and that crew. Remember Vegas Ferguson and Jerome Havens, those running backs they had. He was a running backs coach, and with that big offensive line, he would tell those guys, make sure you run with those guys in pregame and get used to the ground shaking so you don't trip and fall when you're running in the game.
Perfect.
That's Mekhi Becton.
He is an NFL Network analyst. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at CFD22. Good friend of the program. NFL Network is providing live coverage of the Combine today at 4 p.m. Eastern. The quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends get it going. Charles Davis already there getting it on. Charles, appreciate you so much. What a great job. Thank you very much for that.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. Talk soon, I'm sure.
You're the best. Charles, thank you. Charles Davis, he's got such good energy for it. Great enthusiasm, great intel. And he's already there. NFL Network all over the Combine. He makes a really good point, too. Everybody said nobody would ever insert whatever you want to say about it. Nobody will watch that. Nobody will attend that. Certainly nobody's going to do that in person. It'll never be in prime time. Who gives a damn? As I mentioned about the NFL, the season has been over for weeks. The regular season has not started for months. And yet that's all we're talking about. NFL, wall to wall. Combine, CBA. It doesn't matter. I could do a show exclusively on that. His whole point, too, also about NFL Network. A network devoted to just one thing all day? Who's going to watch that? Yeah, sign the tennis channel. There will always be somebody to watch that, especially the biggest thing in the world, the NFL. All right, when we come back, I'm still looking for a good phone call to keep this thing going. We've already had one great phone call from Portland Woman. Julian Portland. I also want to give you a heads up and a preview of this week's episode of the Jim Rohn Podcast. Scott Pioli came on. He was great. Tremendous anecdotally. Working out is hard. It has always been hard, but Bombas can make even the toughest workouts a lot more comfortable. Bombas performance socks are designed for everything from running to hiking to cycling and more. They're made with a lightweight poly cotton blend. It means no matter how hard you're working, your feet stay cool and dry and comfortable, never jacked up and sweaty. Bombas are built with a special arch support system that is supportive but not too tight. Their left-right contouring and Y-stitched heel keep your socks perfectly in place. And you know that annoying toe seam that most socks have. Bombas ditched it. Did you also know that socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters? Bombas socks were created to change that.
So for every pair that you buy, Bombas will donate a pair to somebody in need. Go to bombas.com/JimRome. Get 20% off your first purchase. I'm going to spell it for you. B-O-M-B-A-S. BOMBAS.com/JimRome and get 20% off. Bombas.com/JimRome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Small business technology advisors are ready to help with advice, dedicated one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions like computers with Intel Core processors, server storage, and more. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BY-DELL. 877-BY-DELL. All right, this goes back to the top of the program, literally, hour number one. I lost some of this reaction because we had interviews that went back-to-back right after that. I talked about the most heinous smoothie ever in terms of trying to get weight gain. Rome, I would be more interested in the primetime NFL Combine if they broadcast the Wonderlic testing. Can you imagine the entertainment of Vince Young looking in the air, trying to sneak a peek at someone else's paper, picking under the desk and finding gum while scoring a six? Sign me up for that. John in Huntington Beach. You know, I feel badly for the players that they're told, they're promised confidentiality, and yet those Wonderlic scores always leak, don't they? I mean, I don't feel badly for the Pat McAnally's when it gets leaked that he got a 50, or Mike Mamula, but I feel badly for the guys who get leaked when they get a 6. Now, if they were to televise the Wonderlic, would people watch it? Hell yeah. You bet. It's everybody's favorite part of the combine. Hey, Jim. Many of my competitors dread the combine. However, I absolutely enjoy participating in it, particularly the three-cone drill. Vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. Also, the 40-yard Danish and the chocolate Wonder Fall Lick test. Impressively yours, Russell Croissant, former tight end, current full baby back ribs. Sincerely, Thin Lesks. Hey, Rome, if that athlete replaced the Gatorade with Diet Coke, that smoothie would be a weight loss shake. Well done. Signed, Fat Americans.
Fat!
Hey, Rome. You're... Vadi. Vadi's one of those dudes. Like, Vadi's the epitome of A or F. Vadi's feast or famine. I would say, give me an A or give me an F. Nobody wants a C. A C is bad. Give me something really, really good or something really horrible. That's Vadi. Vadi in Pasadena tweets or emails. Hey, Rome, you're absolutely right. That concoction sounds absolutely disgusting. Gatorade, that puts it over the top as an auto puke. Regards, Powerade truthers. War bums using a vibrating restaurant pager as a Nintendo 64 rumble pack. See, Vadi? I'm going to give you an A for that. Powerade truthers. Hey, Jim. Ben Barish gained 70 pounds. I instantly lost 70 pounds. Signed, Dave Matthews Tour Bus. Not surprisingly, Drew in West LA sent that. Be even less surprising if Rex in Albuquerque sent that. But if not Rex, then okay, it's Alvin. If it's not going to be Rex, it's definitely going to be Drew in West LA. This goes back to the Barch smoothie. Rome, back in college, I put my tender heart in a blender. Sincerely, Eve 6. I put my tender heart in a blender. David Chicago gets credit for that. Nice job. Well done, Dave.
Hey, Jim. How does the word adult and kickball even end up in the same sentence? Signed Damien in Vancouver. It's a good point. I mean, it is kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? Adult kickball. Really counterintuitive. Yo, bro, how long before you run an adult hopscotch league? An adult tag league. I got to know about the other losers who were in that league that you presided over. How many adult losers were playing kickball with you, Ritt? 32 teams. How many people to a team? 16 people. 16 to 20. You found 16 to 20 losers and then multiplied it by 32. And y'all got together and played kickball. Bro, tell me they didn't pay cash to do it. How much cash? $100. The only way out of this with any kind of respect whatsoever, Ritt, is if you took that $100 entry fee from every one of them and you put it in your pocket. Tell me you embezzled that kickball money. And laundered it. Wow, man. Dude, I got to be really honest with you. If I had any idea that you even played adult kickball, much less presided over the league, we would have laughed your ass right out of this house. And yet, here you are pulling a paycheck from me. How did you do that? How did you do that, Mr. President? I'm employing a guy that was a president of a kickball league. I feel like I'm one of those guys who back in the day, before you could background check everybody, lied on their resume about something. See, he didn't lie. He put it right on the resume and I didn't see it. This is on me, not him. I'm going to own this. I'm totally accountable for it. I'm totally responsible for it. He did not lie and say, hey, you know, I went to Notre Dame, when he never did. Right there in broad daylight, in clear print, he wrote, President of Adult Kickball League. And somehow I missed it. Absolutely incredible. Look, old man, stop talking to me. Right? I'm embarrassed enough by this whole episode. I'm going along thinking, man, Ritt's doing a pretty good job, man. He's booking his ass off on the podcast. He's got a good attitude. He's got the worst diet ever, and he'll drop dead probably in the next year or two. But, you know, guy works hard. This is not an easy gig. Slamming like an Almond Joy right now or something. And then I found out he was the president of an adult kickball league. I mean, God, what a... Talk about something biting you in the ass. And it's all my fault. That's the worst part. Yeah, he got through the door. It's my fault. I opened it for him. All right, when we come back, stay on hold. Do not hang up. I've got a segment left. I'm looking for phone calls. If you're on hold and you've been on hold, it'd be really dumb to hang up right now because you might be next. Stay on it. Dumb is hiring a guy who played kickball as an adult. Dumber. Segment. Let's get a phone call in here. We go to the district in D.C. Donald? Donald, what's going on?
Hey, you.
Go ahead, Donald. You're on the air.
Hey, Jimmy. Huge fan. Been listening to you for about 3 years now. I just wanted to say, I've heard a lot of people in the news saying that Joe Burrow is fake news. He's got small hands. He's probably a Democrat. Sounds like he was named after a hobbit. Well, I was down in Mar-a-Lago the other day, and I ran into him. And let me tell you, he's just a fantastic guy. He may have small hands, but he's got a huge head. Now, I had a question for you regarding Hawk. Is he under contractual obligation?
No.
I was considering him as a member of my cabinet. Maybe Secretary of Offense. Last of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to Ritt, one president to another. It's a tough job, but together we can make kickball great again.
Together we can make kickball great again. Oh, I get it. You're Donald Trump. Donald in the district. I see what you did there. Next time, Mr. President... Start with a joke, even a bad joke like that, instead of waiting till the very end of the phone call to make that joke. Lead with your best material. That opens up the presidential hotline, 1-800-848-9222. 636-8686. Is there anybody else here on hold that you like, Adam Hawk? You screen them all. It's a lot of calls on hold. That thing is lit up like a Christmas tree. But nobody good. No offense if you're on hold. That's really quickly. If you're a football junkie, I've hit it hard today. If you not only love the game, but you love some of the stories that define the game, the people who define the game, then you will love episode 118 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Scott Pioli. Side note, I'm proud of that number, 118. A lot of people start a podcast and they're all gung-ho and they want to do it. Three or four eps in, they're like out, they're done. 118. And I don't do them when I feel like doing them. I do them every week without fail. 118, more than 2 years now. Scott Pioli, my man, has had an amazing football life. And he's a damn good storyteller, too. You know that name because Scott won three Super Bowls as an executive with the Patriots. But that journey to that point is one of hard work and some pretty amazing circumstance. Now, he put himself in the right position at all times, but the story is incredible. Somebody who played college ball at Central Connecticut spent his downtime driving down the road to watch the New York Giants practice, way down the road. Like, as a college student, he was driving 90 minutes each way to camp. And it was at one of those practices where he met a guy who would change his football life, his entire life, forever.
I was a sophomore in college, but I would go back to my hometown and work in bars at night, and then I would have nothing to do with my afternoons. I would drive down to the New York Giants training camp and watch practices. And I was one of those weird kids or kept notes of drills and players because I was a college player at the time, and I was trying to find every edge possible to become a better player. So I would write down drills and listen to what coaches were doing because you could be close to practice back then. While I was doing that, my best friend, college girlfriend, was working the New York Giants training camp, and she just so happened to be working in and around the coach's office. She had cultivated this relationship with Bill, and one day when I was down there at practice, I was visiting with her, and she said she wanted to introduce me to Bill, and Bill and I got into this conversation. Bill was like, so you drive down here from your hometown every day? And I'm like, yeah. I said, well, you know, whenever I have the time. You know, we're just having a conversation. I said, well, I write these notes. And I showed him what I was writing down. He says, you know, I'll talk to Parcells and see if I could allow you to sit in meetings and watch tape. And
incredible.
You can watch all the tape and do all. It was really, Jim, I'll tell you, you think about that moment and how fortuitous it was by just having this access and this incidental contact. And here he meets this young college guy that he sees loves football. He's got absolutely nothing to gain from cultivating that relationship at all. I've never really asked him why he did what he did, but that's when the relationship started. And from there, it blossomed.
It's an amazing story. Like, on the one hand, you have a college football player driving down to Giants practice to take notes from the stands so he can improve. On the other hand, you've got Bill Belichick, who meets Scott Pioli and immediately invites him to hang with the coaches in the film room as a college student. And as Scott points out, what does Belichick get out of that? A film room which included, at times, Bill Parcells, the same Bill Parcells who would later become Pioli's father-in-law. Like, you can't make this stuff up. He goes on to work with Belichick at Cleveland because Belichick had promised him, if I ever get a gig, I'm going to bring you with me. And then they ultimately meet back up in New England, where they win three Super Bowls together between 2000 and 08. The run also included that improbable loss to the Giants that wrecked a perfect 18-0 season. I asked Scott what he thinks about more frequently, the Super Bowls he won or the ones he didn't.
I don't know if this is a healthy thing or not, Jim. I feel like you're my therapist right now. I unfortunately think about the two losses more often. If people talk about the 28-3 loss when I was with the Falcons and losing to the Patriots and how awful that was, you know, being down that many points. But I got to tell you, Jim, when people ask which loss was worse, there's, you know, truly no comparison. When you're sitting at 18-0 and on the threshold of history, again, we didn't lose the Super Bowl. We didn't lose a game. We lost history. I'm not a cynic and I'm not a negative thinker. But I think human nature is you do think about the ones that got away. And the 18-1 season, there's not a week that goes by that doesn't come to my mind, and probably maybe even more often than that.
I mean, that's real. It does not get any more honest than that. And if Scott Pioli thinks about that loss to the Giants in 08 as much as he does, you've got to wonder how much Belichick and Brady think about it. Speaking of Brady, I want to get Scott's opinion on his pending free agency. And more specifically, if he feels like Brady owes anybody anything in New England.
No, he doesn't. And again, with all due respect to all Patriots fans, to the Patriots franchise, to the Crafts, to Bill, no one in that group owes anyone anything. Talking about Tom specifically, he has given everything that his body and mind possibly could. Along with that, he brought 6 world championships. He only needs to answer to himself, his family, his parents, and Giselle and his children. What he needs is to be happy. You know, I feel that same way about Bill. You know, Bill has given his everything to that, and everyone has been rewarded. The fan base has been rewarded. The Crafts have been rewarded. The league has. The game has. No one in that group owes anyone anything, in my opinion, at this point in time.
I think that's true. I agree. I mean, business is business. Both sides are going to do what's best for each side. Brady will do what's best for him and his family. Belichick will do what's best for him and his organization, same as it ever was. So I mentioned Scott got a very fortunate break from Belichick early on. He made the most of it. Now he's paying it forward because he was able to help do the same for Katie Sowers, who became the first openly LGBT coach and the first female coach in Super Bowl history earlier this month as an offensive assistant with the 49ers.
My family and I were in Kansas City. Katie was our daughter's 5th grade basketball coach. And Katie talked to me on a daily basis, or every time I saw her, she wanted to talk a little bit of football. She was a football player herself. We cultivated this relationship and friendship, and she became a dear friend of the family of my wife and myself and our daughter. I mentored her and taught her and was trying to find an access point for her to get an opportunity. And then finally, in 2016, when I was with the Atlanta Falcons, had been there for a year and had been trying to get her in, and I was able to get her, you know, an access point as a 4-week coaching intern as part of our Bill Walsh University Coaching Fellowship, because that was one of the jobs that I had there, was to fill our coaching staff with people that were a part of the program. And when she came in, she worked with us for 4 to 5 weeks as a coaching intern, and then it was over. But then I saw what a great job she had done, and I had to hire a seasonal intern for the scouting department, which normally came from our scouting department interns during training camp. But Katie was the best, hardest working, most qualified, knowledgeable football person that we had as an intern, and I offered her that job, and she came to work with us for the next 10 months, and that's how it all got started.
It's an incredible story. In fact, that podcast is littered with amazing behind-the-scenes stories from the highest level of football. I cannot recommend that enough if you're a football junkie who loves the inside access. And I can't remind you enough that the reason I do that is because we can't do things like that on this show. You need that kind of real estate. And Scott Pioli came on and gave us it like 40 minutes. Really good 40 minutes. And that's what this episode is all about. Extremely thoughtful guy. High energy guy, high achiever, 5-time NFL executive of the year, 27 years as an executive in the NFL, 3 rings, lost a couple other ones in heartbreaking fashion. So that's really a good podcast episode. You can check it out on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, JimRome.com. Look for it on my Twitter page. The link is there. I'd appreciate that very much. Subscribe, and then you will never have to do anything ever again. Now we're done. What a great day that was. It's a good talk show. Proud of that effort. We go back. We start over again tomorrow. We'll finish strong, though. It's a Friday. I was talking with the big head, James Kelly, last night. I'm like, bro, if you have good insight and good intel, I will bring you back for a hit on Friday. So we may do that tomorrow. Look for it. John Calipari back in hour number one. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner in hour number one. Another good conversation with Charles Davis. Thank you for listening. Y'all have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.